Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018 for the final hangout on what I think is the fifth night. And this is with Ramsey Paul. So I think most of you will know Ramsey Paul. But actually, just for the sake of it, why don't you introduce yourself? I'm curious to how you would introduce yourself.
We were talking about that beforehand because, like, my name is Paul Ramsey, but everyone knows me as Ramsey Paul. And when I go to conventions, everyone just calls me Ramsey or Ramsey Paul. So that's cool. I think it's probably like you with Woes. Everyone calls you Woes. Even though that's not your real name, I know. I won't dox you. We'll call you Woes, but it's sort of weird. So when I'm with the people that are like my YouTube friends, I call them, they all call me Ramsey or Ramsey Paul. So, and thanks for having me on. And I like your background. We were talking about that before we started. It's quite festive.
Yeah, it's now speeding up more than I realize. I think it's doing this weird thing, but it's alternating between speeds, which could get quite dizzying. And it looks like I'm at a disco.
It's almost like a strobe. And you got to be careful. You remember that one guy that sued someone because he sent him a strobe GIF on Twitter?
I'll go and slow it down, right? Hold on. You can talk about your channel for like 30 seconds while I...
I don't want you getting sued by someone by having like a convulsion or something.
That's just ridiculous. If I end up getting sued, ground lighting is too fast. But let's protect ourselves. Okay.
Yeah, now we'll be nice because I read your channel that you don't advocate hate or violence, but I tend to be hateful at times, though, so I don't know what to do about that. So,
Well, do your best while I'm away sorting this out. Okay.
All right. I'll do like a monologue. So, Millennial Woes is going off now to change the lights. And I have a story about Millennial Woes. I don't know if you guys knew it. I saw him in Finland. He was one of the speakers last year. And went to the sauna together, so you got to ask him about that story. I don't know. That's kind of a cool, like, apartment he's in or something. Yeah, I don't know.
If it stays at that speed, it might be okay.
No, I was just kidding you. I don't think you're going to get sued. It just reminded me of that.
Well, you never know, though. I mean, you were kidding, but you know, some dick might not be kidding when they, you know, get my channel taken down because I gave them an epileptic fit.
I don't want you to. It might be a hate crime. I don't know. So,
and it should be okay.
What was that guy? It was like Kurt something. I believe he's a nice Jewish gentleman, but someone sent him that strobe thing. He said he went into a convulsion and he sued the guy, and it was hilarious.
See, I am actually epileptic myself, mildly. But
are you? Yes.
Yeah, so I should be able to get away with giving other people seizures. But
I've never had a seizure. What I do that's very strange, though, and I don't know how many people in the audience do this. Even as an adult, I still sleepwalk. I don't know if you've ever done that. It's really creepy. Yeah, I sometimes just find myself in another part of the house at night. So it's bizarre.
Really?
Yeah. It's very rare for adults, but I do sleepwalk. Yeah. So it's one of those things. And I was telling the audience when you were going messing around with those lights, we met it a couple times, but the last time I really got to talk to you because in Sweden I met you, but it was packed and we didn't really have time to talk. I think the last time we really talked was in Helsinki. And that was a great time with Tina and Eunice. That's her fiance. And by the way, guys, I just want to plug it. We were talking before the show. They're having another conference in April. If you guys have never been in the conference, and I suppose you can add on to this what your feeling is, but don't hesitate. Go, because it's just so much fun. And it's like 20% of the experience is listening to the speeches, but really 80% for me is just meeting people that are like-minded. You hang out, you talk. I don't know, Woes, is that your experience too at those things?
Oh, yeah. And that one in particular had a very unique atmosphere, which, you know, as I said at the time, meant that my usual speeches didn't work. I don't think they worked very well at all. But for everyone else, and for me as well, you know, apart from the speeches, it was great. Oh, for God's sake, it's doing that fast-paced thing again.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's okay. It's that got popular in America. I don't know if you did where you live, but they started to do these flashing lights set to music in Christmas. It's real obnoxious. Like have Mannheimer steamroller and
it's ridiculous. Flashes.
I know, it's just really gaudy. So
yeah.
I don't know. Some people, they really like to just go crazy here in America and decorate their houses outside with makes it look like a used car lot. I don't know. Do they do that in Europe? But they do in America sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that kind of stuff has begun to seep in. Yeah, you'll see that. You'll see gaudy displays at Christmas. But, you know, I don't know. I can't bring myself to disapprove of those things, really, because it's like people are just, you know, throwing themselves into
it. I like it. Yeah, my brother used to really be big on that. He had his home near San Francisco. His was so big that the newspapers, they put out maps people can drive to and look at homes. And he was on the map. That's how much he did his house. But, you know, obviously he's a woodworker, but he does electronics and he's an electrician. So he had just really quite the thing, real blinged out, real obnoxious. So that's the thing. But yeah, guys, go to the conference. It's a lot of fun.
What I was saying was the atmosphere was really nice and social, and everyone was having a good time, just like this kind of thing, you know, discotheque.
Yeah, well, not only that, but I was telling you, there was like a whole nude part of it too. That
yeah, the sauna afterwards. Well, yes.
But unfortunately, these saunas are supposed to be co-ed, but at least the one I was in, I mean, no offense, it was just like you and a bunch of guys and.
Guys being guys, right?
Like, there was no girls there though that went into the sauna with us, so I don't know.
No, it was quite nice. It was a traditional thing in Finland.
It was.
They all have a sauna in their house, apparently.
And that's like a Finnish thing. They just love it. So.
Mm. So yeah, it was good, and the conference itself was really good. I think how many speakers was it? Like 12 speakers or something crazy like that.
Yeah. It was packed. It was like in a restaurant, but it was really full. And they had, because you get these conferences in Europe, because Europe is, these countries are small compared to America. So you have people from so many different countries. There were Germans, Swedes, obviously Finnish, Hungarians, Romanians, even Russians. I think the Russians were probably Putin spies trying to influence us. And
So some people are making sarcastic comments about the nature of the sauna and so on.
I knew they would, but that's okay. So it was actually, I've never been in a true sauna like in Finland before, because they also have like this really cold water you're supposed to go into beforehand, and so you have this two extremes, and the sauna is so hot you can only stay in there like, I don't know, 15 minutes until you just get too hot. Then you go out and go into the cold water, and it's quite the experience.
Yeah. And I will confess that I did not jump into the cold water. I kind of wish I had done that.
I did that. It was very, it really shakes your system. But it was a good time, but that really wasn't, that was more of a private thing, but that actually the conference, it was really nice, really nice people. So if people get a chance to go to something like that, if you're ever thinking about, hey, I want to go to Europe and see different things, I would recommend that. You can see Finland, you know, make a week out of it, then go to the conference. And it's real mellow. There was no anti-fa or anything like that. There was one like real pathetic guy. Remember him?
Yeah, he wasn't from Finland either.
I think he was Polish or something.
Polish something. I can't recall. And he was standing outside with some ridiculous sign. It just looked pathetic and tragic.
Yeah, he had a really sad look on his face too.
I'm not surprised. I mean,
people felt sorry for him, and they brought him out coffee and everything. He was just like
right wing coffee, obviously.
Yeah, we know. So yeah, it was a great time. So how's your Christmas, Woes? You got all your shopping done?
Yes, I got that all done before millennials started. So it was a quite a stressful period. November, November was very full and very busy. And obviously the first 10 days of December. And now it's just sort of playing out, and the schedule is unfolding. And hopefully all the necessary preparation work has been done, and it's going to go fairly smoothly.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, I'm getting so I don't even go to the malls anymore. I don't know if you guys do, but I'm just becoming such a bug man where I just shop on Amazon and just have everything shipped to me. Then I get it that way, because I hate to go to the malls.
Well, I'm the same. And, you know, I just don't really know why anyone. Actually, that was a funny thing with Red Ice did this stream about, is it called Black Friday? Which, is, you know, I mean, we can talk about that name, but anyway, Lana said, why does anyone bother? Like, why does this matter? Why do people bother to go to these malls anymore when you can just get everything online? And I mean, it's a depressing thing in a way, because, you know, we used to have the street, the little shops, then it became the supermarket, then the shopping mall, and now even that is being replaced. But, you know, certain populations, well, they prefer the joy of breaking down the barriers at Black Friday and so on.
Yeah, I think shopping, at least for women, and I don't understand guys, but when I always shopped, I always go in and come out real quick. I do it quick, kind of like I do sex, you know, get it done and get it accomplished. But see, women, they like to shop, and it's just, if you know, if you ever got a girlfriend and they go into a store, that it's just forever, and it's just a tedious nightmare. So by doing it online, I just search for what I want, I get the best price, and I order it. So it's nice and clean.
Yes. And that links with something else that we were going to talk about the mall. What was it? Because I was going to ask you, oh, yeah, about American shopping malls and the strip mall thing, because that...
Well, you know, it's changed, yeah, because when I'm older than you, but when I was a teenager, malls were kind of like hangouts for teenagers, like when I was that age, and they weren't violent or anything. It was just sort of a social activity kids would go to. But what happened?
Did you play at the arcade on the video games?
I did. In fact, I was a very good. I don't want to brag to people. You know, I hate to brag, but I was one of the best Robotron players around. So I'm not doing that to impress the girls out there, but it was true. That was my game, Robotron. And then there's the game Defender and Miss Pac-Man. I never played that much, but did you ever get involved with the arcades? I don't even know. You're probably too young to know what these arcade games are.
Well, I mean, I've seen them in War Games and Tron and things like that. You know, it's obviously
you've seen them in movies. But I experienced it for real. You get a bunch of quarters and you just be playing the afternoon in these arcades. So
must have been great.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's mostly guys. There's not very many girls that really played arcade games. It's mostly guys, and
But the girls would surely be watching and seeing who's the best player, who's best at this, and you know.
There weren't very many girls that would really watch guys play.
Maybe games that was just in the films.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. I probably was kind of it was a thing. We would go to the mall, we'd play some hacky sack. Do you know what that is? I don't even know if they do that anymore.
No, I don't know what that is.
It's like a little ball that you kick around and you have like form a circle of guys. It's sort of like soccer skills. It's a little ball like this big, and then a hacky sack. I bet some people in the audience have heard of it. And we would do that, and then we would sometimes drink, even though we were not supposed to, and sometimes do other things we weren't supposed to, which is now legal in Colorado. But when I lived there, it wasn't legal what we used to do.
Before we get onto that, press one if you've heard of hacky sack.
You guys have heard of hacky sack. Has anyone heard of it?
I'm afraid there isn't a single one yet.
I can't believe
that. Oh, there's a one. There's a one. Somebody.
All right. Right
now, oh, yeah. It's a sea of ones now. Right. Great.
Okay. Yeah. Jeez.
All right. Suddenly, I can't believe Gen Xers showed up all at once.
Maybe it's a term we called it in Colorado at the time in the 80s. So this would have been the early 80s.
Can you tell me, was it great to be an American in the 80s?
Yeah, it was.
Because like I went to a teenager, you know, it must have been really exciting.
Sure. Yeah. Did you guys ever see that movie? It kind of did the vibe of it, Valley Girls. It was a corny movie, but it's in the 80s.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage, I think that was his name. He was in it. That was when he was young. And it kind of had that feel because the high school I went to literally had no diversity. I mean, we had maybe, I don't know, maybe one or two African Americans. But the thing is when they're not, when they're such a minority like that, they really act white. So they were basically white themselves and maybe some Hispanics. But it was a very non-diverse school. And so but of course we had cliques, but the cliques weren't based on racial. They were based on you were a jock or you were a freak or you were a nerd. It was kind of, or you were in the band. And I don't know when you grew up in Scotland, was it kind of like that? They had cliques based on various attributes or no?
Well, kind of, but I think that this is very much something associated with the American high school. And every American that I've spoken to has said that it was like that at their high school. It doesn't seem like anyone escapes this high school experience where there are all the different, you know, cliques, like the mean girls, the jock, the nerdy girl, the lonely guy, the arty guy, the emo, and, you know, the whatever, the scientist, all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and it was definitely like that. So it was a good time. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was, looking back on it, it was quite nice compared to, I feel sorry. I feel sorry for kids today about what they have to go through.
Yeah, but was there optimism? I mean, about America, because that's what it seems in the films.
Yeah, there was, but there was also, from the left, they were at the time like, oh, Reagan's elected. And as much as Trump is hated, they really hated Reagan, too. Not quite as bad as they hate Trump, but they still really hated him left because they saw him standing up against the Soviet Union, which they all kind of supported. And they said, oh, Reagan's going to cause nuclear war. He's this disaster. And we had all these experts, these scientists said, the doomsday clock is 1 minute to midnight. It's 1 minute and we're all going to die a nuclear death. And they had these television programs like The Day After, and they had all this propaganda they're trying to get everyone all worried about. But the average people my age, we didn't really give a damn about that. At least I didn't. Most people, they didn't really look at that. But there was some pessimism at the time, so it wasn't all optimism.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, in the films it just seems like, God, this must have been so cool.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, at the time you don't realize it, though, because one of the things, ironically, when I was growing up, there was a big nostalgia about the 50s, which I had no idea about, or even the 60s, which I had no idea about, because the generation before me, the boomers, they kept referring back to the good old days of Woodstock, and we need to have these marches. And when my generation hit high school, my generation was the first after the boomers, and they still wanted us to do these marches against U.S. involvement in Central America and all that.
Yeah, but they always talking about that 60s spirit.
Yeah, they always wanted to make it like the 60s thing when I was there, but no one gave a crap about that. And they said, oh, you guys are apathetic. Our generation was more, you know, socially aware, and which was true. My generation didn't give a crap about that. Everyone just wanted to go through school so they get out and make money. So that was kind of when you had the term like yuppie. I don't know if you've heard that term, but that was kind of the whole idea back then.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, wasn't so much as everything back then was, you know, getting out, get a good job, make money, and just, you know, do what you want that way. That was kind of the whole idea. No one really cared about these big political issues. I want to say no one, but there were just weirdos on the university that were kind of dated.
So what happened? I mean, I don't know if you've ever sort of, and if you want to talk, God, that's quite distracting. I do apologize. How did you end up in the dissident right, as it were? I mean, from, you know, if we go from the happy 80s Ramsey Paul to, you know, 2007.
Yeah, well, my political views, back then I was more of like a libertarian, but I wasn't so much into politics. So I was always, I guess if you call libertarians on the right, I was definitely opposed to communism and stuff. But again, I was more about, I went into tech, I was a programmer and that type of thing. So I wasn't really focused on politics and all that type of stuff. And I kind of got into the whole YouTube thing. We were talking about before the show, about 2007, I think. That was before YouTube was even owned by Google. And it was a real fun experience back then. It wasn't as professional. There was really no censorship. And everyone was doing weird different things, trying experimental. And I got into it just because I belonged to a forum called Liberty Forum, is a libertarian forum. And there was this new thing called videos. And I thought, hey, I'll try a couple of videos and put it on the forum. So that's kind of how I started. And then I started to see, you know, I became a lot more right wing when I started to see how everything was going, because the nation, it really after 2001, really took kind of a nosedive into the whole anti-white bit, totalitarianism, where is before that in the 80s and the 90s, we didn't really have that thought. You really didn't have this anti-white type of thinking.
No. When would you say that started?
I would say after 2001, that's when I started to really notice it. Now, of course, the roots of it go, I mean, back to the Frankfurt School. So it existed somewhat on the university. But even when I went to the university, the leftists and the Marxists, when you met a Marxist, they meant economic systems, and they would debate about that. It wasn't about whitey be evil. That really wasn't their focus. Now they've pretty much abandoned the economic platform of, and now, hell, they're all pro-Google, pro-Apple, and all that. But now it's all social, that being a leftist means basically you hate white people, which I don't know if you saw. Ann Coulter got in trouble because she was on Fox News. She said the Democratic Party is composed of all these fragments, like Jews, homosexuals, blacks, and all these weirdos. And the only thing they have in common is their hatred of the white male. And she got, you know, it was just like, oh, they, and she's an anti-Semite. And, but it's true. I mean, that's the only thing that really holds them together. Whereas when I was younger, the left was more about economics.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, nobody actually cares about economics anymore. Whether it's the socialists or the communists or anti-fi, I don't think that anyone really cares about that. Because
I don't see that. I don't see them going out marching against Google or Facebook or all that, because years ago, like, you know, when I was younger, that would have been the big thing, fight against the corporations. And I remember you couldn't even get the CIA to recruit on our campus because they weren't allowed on, because all the students back there from the hippie types, they hated the CIA, the FBI, the establishment. And now they are the establishment, which is ironic.
Because an interesting thing, you tell me what you think about this, that possibly the move from economic Marxism to cultural Marxism enables a lot more women to get into it, like young women who just don't know anything about economics.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they had the women back in there into the economics. I think they had to shift gears when the Soviet Union fell apart. There was kind of a void. And so they picked up more on the cultural Marxism stuff. It always existed from the Frankfurt School, and that was always a noxious element, but it was still pretty small. It wasn't the defining characteristic of the left like it is now.
It's funny. I'm going to change the speed of these lights because I can't go on like this. I'm worried that something's going to happen or that I'm going to have a fit. So, I don't know. You talk about something innocuous while I sort this out once and for all. And I do apologize for that.
No, that's fine. Good luck.
I thought I would try something different for Ramsey Hall, and it has backfired. So I am sorry.
But I don't mind. But yeah, if that's bothering you, go ahead and change it. So, and yeah, it's kind of interesting because Woz is actually the same ethnicity as me. Ramsey is a Scottish name. So if I was to have a homeland, which I wish I did, it'd be Scotland. Of course, I can't go back to Scotland, and I don't think I would be allowed there. But I envy people like Hungarians that have a homeland to go to. Oh, welcome back, Woz.
Hello. I think I've got it to the normal thing now.
That's good. Yes.
Okay. So we've talked about communism, Marxism, and all this. And so at some point, 2007, what were your earliest videos like? Were you addressing this kind of thing, or was it other topics?
One of my earliest videos was like on peak oil, and I mostly dealt with the economics, but then it kind of went into other areas too. And I wasn't so much racial at that time at all. And if I never intended it to be that way, but just because of events in America, it kind of forced us, because the left became so focused on race then that I think it had the reaction on the right. Again, in the 80s, the left was focused on economics, so the right was focusing on economics. But now with the whole Trayvon Martin and everything, it became all racially focused. Not only racially, but, you know, with feminism, went into hyperdrive after 2001. So I started to talk about those topics too. And so that's kind of how it came about.
And then, go on.
No, but the problem was, is when I started to talk about these issues, I got a lot of the I didn't even know existed, but kind of the neo-Nazi type crowd trying to grab a hold of me and make me one of theirs, which I never really wanted. So there's always been sort of that tension of how can we talk about racial matters and sexual matters without, you know, being the see cow type crowd. And that is something that I think it really came to the peak in 2017. And it seems like we've kind of gone through a phase now where we've kind of, that sort of thing is subsided a little bit.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is that at this point on YouTube, it seems like the range of subjects that we can talk about is getting narrower. I mean, really, and I'm not going to go into another one about, you know, the censorship and deplatforming, because we've talked about it a lot on Millennial. But just briefly, could you give your own perspective on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible, all the people that are being deplatformed. And I knew that was coming when that happened to the Daily Stormer. And not that I was ever a fan of the Daily Stormer. I think they're talented and they're funny, but they did cause a lot of issues of associating the alt-right with this kind of goofy element. But once they were deplatformed, that really set the precedent that allows people like Gavin now to be deplatformed, Laura Loomer,
Alex Jones.
It's just everyone now. And so we got this situation in America, unlike Europe, it's good we have the First Amendment. That's another story I could talk about. I guess theoretically we do, even that's sort of in doubt now. But we have a First Amendment. You can say anything you want without being arrested. But there's just these handful of these monopolies that control really the whole social space that can cut you off from social media, cut you off from banking. Who knows? In the future, they may cut you off from being able to buy food at these grocery stores. So, I mean, what does it mean then if you have free speech, that if you speak freely on politics, you end up, you can't feed yourself? It's silly. And again, years ago, the left would have opposed that because it left. That was like one of their defining issues of free speech. This is a core issue of dissent. And they would have, you know, gone apeshit about all these big monopolies censoring speech. And but they're now, because they control these monopolies, they're perfectly fine with it.
Well, exactly. I mean, and the latest thing now is that I just saw before we went on air, you know, you'll have heard of Subscribestar. Have you not heard of Subscribestar? It's like taking over from from Patreon. It's like an alternative to, it's like, you know, Patreon and Maker Support.
Is it independent or is it associated with? I heard YouTube is going to come out with something like Patreon too.
Are they? Oh, I didn't know about that.
And that's going to be, that'd be a big threat to Patreon, by the way, if YouTube does that.
Yeah, it would be. But, well, what's happened is that Sargon of Akkad got banned from Patreon.
Yeah.
And so many of his supporters who were funding him through that have abandoned Patreon as well. And so, he's I think this company, Subscribestar, that we're just starting up, contacted Sargon and said, well, you can join us and, you know, we won't deplatform you. So Sargon's gone over there. That means that hundreds and hundreds of his supporters have gone over there. Mm-hmm. And, but now, and it's actually made, I think he's actually making as much as on Subscribestar as he was making on Patreon, which is $12,000 a month.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
But now the lefties are going after Subscribestar, and they've already managed to persuade PayPal to drop support for Subscribestar. A matter of days, like a matter of 2 days.
Yeah, that's the really crazy thing. And even from a libertarian point of view, I could argue that we have these banking systems, and the banking system, they're not really private. I mean, because our banking system almost failed in the United States in 2008, and the taxpayers bailed them out. They're heavily subsidized. So the idea that the banking system can really control this and to put a stop to speech, I think is unconscionable. I think the Supreme Court needs to look at this. I think the legislature needs to look at this, not that they will. But this is a huge issue for our time. So you're right. You could have a company that wants to provide an alternative, but then you have a banking system with just controlled by a handful of people. They get tons of taxpayer aid. They're always bailed out. So they're in bed with the government, able to dictate who can say what and who can speak. And it's someone like Sargon. My God, that guy, he's like a liberal. And if you won't allow him to speak, it's just crazy. We don't have free speech in this country.
No, I mean, he's obviously in Britain, but the companies concerned are, I think, all right, based in America, except Subscribestar, which is Russian.
Oh, well, see, that could be the hope, is if in Russia that you can to do that, if they have servers over there. It'd be ironic if people start having to go to Russian based technology to get around censorship. Well, my life will be a full circle from what happened from when I was younger. We're like the Soviet Union now, and Russia's becoming the free country.
Yeah, it could well be. I said this to Sargon on the Hangout a few nights ago, but at that point I didn't know that Subscribestar was founded by a Russian, but it is. And I said that an ironic thing would be if it actually turned out that the Russians did start to support the dissident right, because of course that was Hillary's big thing 2 years ago in Reno, that infamous speech she gave. She linked it all with the Russians. And at that point, it was, I think, entirely fictitious. You know, she linked Alex Jones with the alt-right, with, I can't even remember what else, was the KKK. I think she did invoke them, at least. And then with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, she's the one, I think she's the first major politician to really talk about the alt-right. And so that really kind of put it on the map in many ways. And that would be interesting if Russia could do that. And they could do that not just for political reasons, but for economic reasons, because if everyone gets deplatformed in the United States, there could be an economic incentive just to go there. And they could make a lot of dollars or rubles from that, too. So that'd be interesting.
Well, I don't know. I think that it might turn out to be that is how we're going to end up surviving. Through Russian stuff, there'll be a Russian payment processor and so on.
Yeah, but if that happens, I bet the United States Senate or the Congress tries to block it or whatever. I bet they do. So it'd be interesting to see, though.
Yeah, very interesting. So I guess we can talk about your channel and the future of it. What plans do you have for next year, if any, or do you just take it as it comes?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Jack Posobiec, or how do you pronounce his name, Jack?
Jack Posobiec.
Posobiec. I apologize, Jack, if you're watching, but he tweeted something like, only 5% of people realize their goals. Will you be one of them, or something like that? You know, one of those motivational things. And I retweeted, wow, that looks like a good reason not to make goals in the first place. And I think it's kind of true. I think it's kind of silly to necessarily make goals. I think it's better to focus on what you love and try to do the best you can on it. And instead of trying to make these arbitrary goals that you can't, I mean, you know what? I could make a goal. I got 50-some thousand subscribers on YouTube. I mean, what? I can make a goal of 75,000 or 100,000 by the end of the year. But what does that really mean? It doesn't. You know, I got to put the work into it. I got to do the things. And I want to do that anyway. So I don't really care about an arbitrary number. To me, that's irrelevant. I know that's not official goal setting, but I don't care about goal setting. So where I want to go with the channel is I continue what I'm doing. And then also continue with my Happy Homelands live stream. I really enjoy that with Tina
Vick. I was going to ask you about that after this. But
So basically, I went back to my old format because I kind of got into a rut because I started to do a little bit more, I don't know, black pillish a little bit, longer videos. And that's not my style. And that's not, other people can do more cerebral videos, longer videos like Jared Taylor and stuff. And that's good. We need people like that. But that was never my style. My video style was always shorter videos to spot a single topic that people every morning can get on and take a look at and enjoy and pass around. So that's, I'm kind of going back to my original format where I just had fun with my videos. And I like it better doing it that way. And I actually get more audience engagement doing it that way. Again, I think if you do what you enjoy, the audience responds. And if you try to do something that's really not something you enjoy, it doesn't really work. So I'm kind of going back to my old style there.
It's funny just to hear you say that, because I think I need to heed that wisdom as well. Because, you know, I've got into a rut. Obviously, live streaming is a completely separate thing, and what I'm going to say doesn't apply to that. But with my own videos, I definitely got into a rut in the last, like over the last year, maybe 2 years, and where I was really agonizing about each and every one of them, and you know, and it just became pleasureless and awful. Really, I realized like in about July this year or August, I realized I really do not enjoy this anymore. I hate it, in fact. And I remembered back to the early days when I really just switched the camera on and started talking and didn't give a shit. And not because of arrogance, but because I had nothing to lose, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I thought, yeah, it'd be nice to get back to that. And I don't know if you can, because it's like you can't ever return to a previous, you know, everything's changed. Everything has changed. You can't deny that. But you can at least try to learn some lessons from, you know, the way you were.
Yeah. And part of the time when I started getting back to YouTube, it was not as professional back then. So everyone was experimenting with new things. Whereas now YouTube is, at least with the bigger accounts, they become very sterile. I mean, they're very professional, but they're kind of all the same. And so back then I was looking at Z Frank and all these different guys that were doing weird different things. And everyone was experimenting how they do edits, how they would do certain types of videos. And so I did that with my videos. I would do a lot of different kind of crazy things. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it wouldn't. But it's easy, you're right, just to get into a rut of doing the same thing over and over. And the hard time thing I had to do is, how do you talk about a subject without just repeating the same basic bitch talking points? I mean, sometimes it's like, what else are you going to say about it? All right, there's a terror attack, like recently this week in France, by some Muslim shot up a Christmas market. What do I say about it? You know, what more do we say about something like that? You know, you really can't make a joke about it. And you can do the old talking points, oh, we need to stop immigration. This is an example how multiculturalism doesn't work. But, you know, everyone said that. So it's always a challenge to come up with a new take or a new perspective on something that keeps it interesting. Because a lot of times, a lot of people I used to watch, I just get bored with, because really they make the same video over and over and over. It's basic same things they say over and over. So that's the hard part for me, is to keep it fresh, keep it interesting.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, I think that, as you say, what you should really do is just follow your curiosity and whatever it is that you want to talk about. I mean, I've got no inclination to talk about each new terror attack. I can't imagine anything more boring. Right. I mean, you talk about that with your friends and you say, God, here we go again, you know, but there's no fresh. I mean,
what are you going to say about it? I mean,
yeah. And that's part of the depressing thing. You know, it's like, when the fuck are we going to learn this lesson? You know, when are our politicians going to do it? And, but we've said that as well.
Yeah.
So you can't say that either.
Yeah. And then the another dimension that made it harder from back when I started, because I have a lot of videos. Oh, man, I have some pretty funny videos I wish I could make public again. But I know they'd get me a ban, even though they're not mean-spirited, but they're kind of dealing with some taboos. Because in comedy is about dealing with taboos, basically. And now they've restricted comedy so much, not even with me, even some basic bitch people like Kevin Hart, like a mainstream guy. He can't. You know, he had not to host the Oscars because years ago he made a joke about homosexuals. I mean, it's just crazy now. So what you can do is really, you're like in a straitjacket with all these censors. And so you got to work with the censorship, and you still need to try to be funny. So it makes it more challenging. You can still do it, but you got to be careful how you word things, how you present things. You know, I did a video before. I thought it was my funny video. This is about, I don't even know if I can say what it was about, but I had like blood coming out of my mouth. It was about transgender people. There's no way I could get away with that video now, but I had a lot of fun making that. So, you know, I actually made fake blood and all that. It was a lot of fun, but
fucking hell.
Yeah. Someday I'll release that.
Definitely not 2018, is it?
Yeah, no, I couldn't do that anymore. I'd be like, strike so fast on that video. But sometimes people complain about that. Well, why don't you do your own type of videos you used to do? I'm like, well, shit, I can't do them anymore, though. They banned me. So you gotta change always based on the parameters that you have to live in.
Indeed. So, okay, talk about... before we actually linking to that, what you just said about the climate now, I did want to ask you, because you did a very good video about this, this Julian von Abel thing.
Yes.
What the hell? I mean,
he's ignorant. He needs to read a book.
Well, yeah, the people who
that's about that, the leftists always say, you ignorant, you got to read a book. Read a book and get educated.
Yeah.
This guy's like a prodigy.
Yeah. And that's something they'll say, oh, you're not educated. You're not intelligent. Right. you're miserable, you've got a small penis, and yes, you're a virgin, you live in your mom's basement, and so forth. But none of that applies to him. I mean, he's a nerd, you can say that. That's about it. He's a successful guy already. I think he's only 21 or something. What are your thoughts on this thing? Well, let's describe. Why don't you describe for us briefly what happened?
Yeah, what happened is this guy, he's a physics major, and he's literally a prodigy. He has videos out of him on YouTube when he was in junior high talking about this advanced theoretical physics, trying to teach it. And he was like, his voice hadn't even changed yet. It was just like this kid. And he's already published, as you said, and he's like 20 years old. He's still an undergraduate at Columbia University. And what happened is he was walking and these people started talking about sexual harassment and how Trump supporters, they support rape. And he said, well, I'm a Trump supporter and I don't support rape. And they said, well, you don't have the right to give an opinion because you're a white male. And that's when he just kind of went off. And then they started to film him on their phones. And he said, I don't care. I'm a white male. I'm proud to be white. It's whites that created Western civilization because of us has saved thousands of millions of lives because of our technology. I don't hate other races, but I'm proud of my heritage. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And then so they uploaded it to Twitter. And then the usual odious people like Tim Wise was saying that basically he should be expelled. He should never have a job. He should be basically killed is what he was trying to imply. It was just like crazy. And they're all like freaking out about what he said. But what really makes this interesting, this different, he did not do this thoughts and load it to like YouTube or load it to Twitter. He was just a private person engaged in a private conversation. And now we live in this weird surveillance society that East Germany would have dreamed of like everything now is recorded. So you can have a private conversation with someone, given your political views, and you could be ruined without even knowing, without even having your permission of being filmed. So it's just crazy. It's like a new level of surveillance that's this happening with the country.
They're trying to ruin his life. That's what these fuckers are trying to do to this young guy who's got such promise. It is so reprehensible. Apart from the moral aspect, there's just the also more strategic thing about it, where we don't have that many prodigies. So we have to make use of everyone. And you people are nothing. You people who are object to what he said are not remarkable. They're not notable. You're fucking mediocrities. You're nothing.
Exactly.
How dare you try to sabotage this guy?
And I sometimes go back to my libertarian roots with Ayn Rand and the whole Atlas Shrugged thing, that maybe what needs to happen is people like him to say, well, screw you. We won't provide the technology to feed all these overpopulated Africans. You do it. You don't even know how to do it. I mean, go ahead and starve then. And so it's like the people that are so brilliant start withholding stuff that they could provide. It's just really going to hurt these people that can barely form a sentence, that think they're so superior, that have this whole bullshit notion about Africa inventing everything. I'm like, dudes, it didn't happen. When we went into Africa, they were like in mud huts. I mean, let's be honest. And we're giving this whole Wakanda nonsense to patronize you. It's not how it was. It's not amazing? Reality.
Exactly the opposite. We are told that our past was awful and we stole everything from other people and on our own we just can't do anything. Africans are told that they had Wakanda. And it's interesting because obviously on the one hand they're not told this is real, this really was a historical location, but it somehow seeps in. Like they actually do think that.
It's amazing. It's just like it's childlike. It's childlike, and it's like and I know why people did that. People did that. Well, we need to help their self-esteem because they really came from primitive tribes. They didn't even have the wheel when we came there. So let's make them feel good about themselves, and we'll say they invented all these things, even nonsense stuff like
lies.
I know it's like, oh, we had to rewrite. The reason we went to the moon was because of these black females that were brilliant mathematicians. And I was like, that's bullshit. I know people in the space program. It was almost like 100% white engineers, almost all male, by the way. And these ladies, all they did is they just performed basic arithmetic, like fact checking. I mean, verifying calculations. It didn't come up with anything original, but they're trying to retcon this all that they were responsible. Like white man couldn't have got to the moon without these brave African-American women. And nonsense. I mean, it's just nonsense. And so we've just totally inverted really what history is. And these people, they believe it now. They really believe they were kings and queens. They had all this vast technology, and somehow evil white man stole it from them because we're tricksters. And
they can't recreate it somehow.
No. It's just amazing. But they really do believe this. It's like really a childlike thinking, but that's where they are. So it just kind of reinforces the point. It's just crazy. So, again, that's why I'm a nationalist. I don't really even want to fight with these people. I'm like, okay, whatever. We're evil. You just do your country and on your own, and you can develop this super technology without us interfering. And we'll be on our own, and we'll try to suffer, but we'll try to make do. Of course, they don't want that because they know that their place would be a real shithole, and ours would be super advanced. It'd be begging to get in. So in a way, they believe it, but in the way, they know the truth. So it's... And I know, I mean, as part of their, to make feel good about themselves and their ancestors, they have to believe these little fairy tales, but that's all it is a fairy tale.
Yep, it is indeed. I don't have anything to add to that because it's all very simple, really. I mean, there's just a mass delusion going on. It's authorized by the cultural establishment for reasons we don't need to go into. And they believe it because it feels good to believe that. Now, I understand. I mean, I don't like the idea that Africans haven't invented very much. You know, I don't like the idea that they're less intelligent than us. It's not something that I think is nice. And I don't, you know, it's not like, oh, I feel great about myself now that I know this. I think it's horrible. But it is a reality. It's a truth. Now, is it a truth, a fact that we have to go on and on about? No. But it is something that should be acknowledged, because if we don't acknowledge that, well, we end up with all this delusion and nonsense. You know, we have to justify, well, why aren't they doing well now?
Well, exactly. That's why the problem is, because if you believe magically there's no evolution in humans, at least in the brain, then you can't explain, like, why are there different test scores? Why do certain groups do better than others? The only explanation you can come up with then is racism and structural racism, because that could be the only explanation if you rule out biological differences. And so they don't want to face the truth, so they have to come up with these other excuses, and it's a disaster.
Yeah, dreadful situation. To talk about something more upbeat, tell us about Happy Homelands. And why, and also why you created that with that title?
That was my intention, because I wanted to create a title that was happy. I literally thought about it because I like homelands, but you know, I didn't want to do something like Stormer Nation or something that just had this whole imagery of being militaristic, or you know. I didn't want that. I wanted something that had give you a vision. Like when I think of happy homelands, I think of blue sky and maybe castles and a wheat field and some blonde girl running through it, you know. And that's kind of the feel I wanted to give for it. And that's, I have a great host, Tina Veek, for that, because she does that, and she's a perfect host. And I shouldn't brag on her because she'll probably listen and be embarrassed. But what I like about her is not only is she really cute, really pretty girl, but she's also very intelligent. So a lot of times, unfortunately, and I understand it, but there's a lot of really pretty girls that are smart in our movement, like Lauren Southern, brilliant girl. She's very beautiful. But then you have some that, you know, they just have big boobs, but that's it. They're not very smart. And yeah, I like to look at girls with big boobs, but if they don't bring anything else to the table, you know, that's not really what I want as a co-host. I want someone that's intelligent, that can ask good questions. So with Tina, I kind of got the beauty and the brains to go along with it. So, and then also her personality, she's very finished. She's kind of low key. So it's not the, I like Laura Loomer, but it's not that aggressive style. It's more of a laid back style, and that kind of fits my personality. So Happy Homelands is sort of a laid back show where it's not a blood sports where we really get into bloody debates. We just talk about with the guest whatever the issues of the days are in a kind of a laid back format.
Yeah, and that is the crucial thing about the upbeat nature of it, because I think that, you know, you come across as an upbeat kind of guy and not too morose or whatever, and I think that is something that we need more of in our community.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's easy to get black-pilled, but we need to also, I mean, we have our duty to do here in life, and there's a lot of enjoyable things, and there's a lot of wonderful things that we can experience, like in Finland. It was a beautiful trip, meet great people, had great fellowship with people. All those type of things really make life worthwhile. So while we can focus on a lot of this negative stuff, there's a lot of positive stuff that we can experience right now. And all the good stories, if you think about it, are always the underdogs get together and eventually win. So we're kind of the underdogs now, and that makes for a better story. It makes it more fun that we're the underdogs in a way than if we were the establishment.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is the big joke about the left, is that they are obsessed with being the underdogs, even though they're not. I mean, they are the establishment, but they can't thole that idea. The very idea that they are in charge completely freaks them out.
Yeah, it does, because they're the establishment and we're the underdogs and we're the ones who are, you know, kind of fighting for the individual, and they can't stand that. So it's that's something we have going for us, even though it can be black-pilling. Although when you are the underdogs, you got to understand there's reasons you're the underdogs, because the other side has all the power to like deplatform, to censor, to be thrown into jail forever because of an accident. They have the power. So we got to understand it's just not theoretical. There's a lot of advantage to being the favorite, to being in charge. You have all the institutional support, which is real. But from kind of a spiritual side or from a storytelling side, it's good to be the underdog. And it's kind of a feel when we all get together at the conference. We're kind of all like-minded people getting together, kind of getting recharged. And that's what's so great about our conferences. It's just so electric. I don't know if you felt that. Whereas they had some stupid MAGA conference, and I didn't even know about it. It was like America Priority Conference. Did you hear about that? It was like, no. It was funny. No one knew. And it was kind of the mainstream people, like Jack Posobiec was there, Mike Cernovich and Laura Loomer. But like no one showed up. It was literally like totally empty. It was like five people there yawning because it was like people don't want to hear about, oh, we need to have another tax cut. And, you know, no, they want to deal with the issues that matter to them in their lives. And those are the issues that we talk about that get people excited. That gets people excited to go to these conferences. We don't talk about these basic bitch GOP talking points. Or I know you're in Europe, that's your background, but I don't know if you have the same type of thing in Europe, but your basic conservative point of view that's safe, but it's not really that edgy. It's boring.
Boring is the word. Now, we'll go into the super. There is only one super chat, actually. I'm afraid to tell you. I'm sorry that there aren't more. But I think it's because people assume that I won't read them out, because that's what I've been doing so far. And I do apologize. That's my own fault. Right. Okay. So the question is, Ramsey, I saw you speak years ago, and you seemed to be in favor of monarchy. I have slowly become pro-monarchy myself. Is that still a thing with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of democracy, because democracy just ends up ruled by the rich. Because if you have the money, you can buy the media, you can buy the politicians. So really, a democracy is, if you're rich, you can buy the institutions that control the kind of dumber people on how to vote. And at least with the monarch had he was part of the people, and he could think long term. Whereas in a democracy, everyone thinks short term. And I think that speech I gave at an American Renaissance is the Dark Enlightenment, and I really appreciated that. I think it's still in line with American Renaissance, unless they put it into a protected state. It didn't say anything bad, but who knows, you know, what the censorship with American Renaissance has been under. But I enjoyed that topic. I learned a lot researching that speech. So I am very, by the way, that's what right wing originally meant. It meant that you sat on the French Assembly on the king's right side, which was support of the king. So it meant tradition, the king, support of those institutions.
Right. Okay. And one other question that I saw come up in the live chat was, what is that sci-fi book on the shelf behind you?
That's a game. Is that what this one here?
Yes, I think that's what they were referring to. What's the title?
Let me get that. I'm going to get that. Show that right. It's Cogs and Commissars. I haven't even opened it yet. I'm going to open it here pretty soon for Christmas. is someone that here, fist my mic, that follows me, and he created this game. It's like one of our type people, and he doesn't have his real name on here because it's like a mainstream game. But it's really cool because I've always been a gamer and I have some game ideas, and I might work with him on developing some other games too. So we can get a lot of our ideas out there in games because a lot of people that are gamers are very receptive to our ideas. And I know that because I still play old World of Warcraft on a private server, by the way, which is in Russia. But when people are able to speak freely, oh boy, they're all like right wings, like 80-90% are hard right wing when they can speak freely. So.
Well, that's something that we see on YouTube as well, and really in comment sections all over the web. That the more actually, there was a sort of study done that I can't remember how reliable this was, but the finding was that the more anonymity there is, the safer people are to speak their minds without repercussions. Oh, yeah. The more openly right wing they are.
Yeah, on this game server I play on, it's in Russia again, but they're not Russians. There's some Russians that play, but there's a huge English speaking population. Wow, they're like more right wing than I am. The stuff they talk about in chat, because they don't censor, they just let you say whatever you want. So it's really interesting how that works when people are allowed to speak freely.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Well, okay, let's leave it at that. I don't think there are any more super chats. Let's see. Takes a wee minute to refresh this. I do apologize. No, there aren't any. Okay, so I think we've been going for about 50 minutes, so that seems quite a nice length. Any final statements that you'd like to say to the audience?
No, I just want to thank the audience. You guys, we really appreciate you. I do. I'm sure you do too, Bose, because you really make it possible. So, because I think for every one of us as public, there's probably like thousands behind the scenes. And that's good. I mean, everyone's got to do what they can do, but I really do appreciate you and your support, and it makes a big difference. And again, I encourage you, you can go to these type of conferences, and it's really safe. And if you want to, it's a good excuse to get to Europe, and you can go to Europe and, you know, visit the sites, but then you can also be around people that you're very similar to you, us. And I've recruited a lot of people that way, going to these things. It's really a fun thing.
Yeah. Just before we go, somebody asks, what are you reading right now? A book or whatever.
The last book I read was Hitler's butler. I think it was called To the End with Hitler.
Oh my God. we managed all this way and then you say that.
Well, it's a mainstream book. It was not a pro-Nazi book or anything like that. But it's really interesting because he was the personal valet of Hitler since like the early beginning before the war and during the war. So he was not involved. You know, he's like a valet, so he wasn't involved with the strategic things. But he got into the whole personalities, which I found were funny, like who he liked. And like Goring was kind of like a buffoon, and he really was. And the people he really, Himmler was a very strange man. And Goebbels, he really liked. He said he was real friendly. So it was kind of interesting. You get a guy behind the scenes was able to talk about the personality. So I'm a big history buff, as you can see with the games I have back there. And I have a lot of World War II games I grew up as a kid, like Luftwaffe. I played Third Reich and all that type of stuff. And back then, there was no stigma against playing those games. It was just history. And I've always loved history and understand how things came about. So it's interesting. So that was the last book, yeah.
All right, excellent. Okay, let's end it there. And I'm sure that this can't get... I mean, we're not going to get punished because you mentioned reading that book, are we?
I hope not.
I hope not. Well, I guess we'll find out tomorrow morning when I wake up. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ramsey Paul.
Yeah, and I thank the audience, and Merry Christmas to everyone, and I hope we have a great 2019.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for taking part, Millennial, and thanks, everyone, for listening in. Now, tomorrow, there are going to be, I think it's, hold on a second, they're all pre-recorded tomorrow, and let's see. Yes, it's five of them tomorrow, starting with Jared Taylor, then Darkest Sky, then Conquering Modernity, which is Julian Langness, then Disgruntled Leaf Network, and finally is Naga 1420, who I used to be on Hangouts with on Adam Wallace's channel back in, I think, 2015. So that was interesting to talk to him again. But yeah, those are five quite good Hangouts. The Jared Taylor one, I was very tired when we recorded that, so I apologize that I wasn't terribly responsive to him. But still, it's Jared Taylor, so yeah, you know, it's going to be a good Hangout. Okay, so that's that, and I will see you the night after that. Thank you, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
V-slot.